to A Meaningful Marketplace.
I'm Sarah Massoni from Oregon State University's Food Innovation Center, where I've helped countless dreamers launch their new food products. It's the science of taking a food delight from the kitchen to mass manufacturing and still keeping its great taste. That's what I do. I've been called the woman with the million-dollar palate, although I haven't tried to cash that check yet. Listen in weekly for real-life stories.
I'm Sarah Marshall, owner of Marshall's Hot Sauce and author of Preservation Pantry, Modern Canning from Root to Top and Stem to Core. I love inspiring business owners to get started on their journeys, encouraging folks to be part of their local community, and I'm excited to help business owners tell their stories. Join us as we explore the journeys of women entrepreneurs in the food and beverage industry. Hello, and welcome to Massoni and Marshall, the Meaningful Marketplace. We are here weekly to interview food entrepreneurs. This is Sarah Marshall, owner of Marshall's Hot Sauce.
And Sarah Massoni of Oregon State University's Food Innovation Center.
Sarah Massoni, I have been gone for a little while, and you have been covering for me, so thank you.
Yes, I missed you, Sarah Marshall.
It's good to be back. It's good to see you. I've missed you as well. I was tending to my family, which happens.
Yes.
But anything you want to update me on? Did I miss? I'm sure I missed so many great things, but tell me
about
it.
Well, we had some really good podcasts. They're all in the can, and everybody can find them on their favorite podcast channel.
Perfect.
I'm not going to tell anyone anything about them. They have to listen.
That's a good tease, my friend.
Uh-huh.
Well, what's going on off the podcast? Do you have any food news for us?
I do have some food news. I've been telling everyone every week to check out the regional food business centers. There's 12 across the U.S., and the mission is to connect underserved food folks with their technical assistance and funding to help bring their food business to the next level. And then I also suggest that everyone connect with their state departments of agriculture. Every state in the U.S. receives some sizable funding that'll be coming out here after January sometime. The applications will be open. And then I wanted to tell everyone on December 7th, the Food Innovation Center is hosting a holiday bazaar featuring startup food entrepreneurs. It looks like we have about 20 registrations for food companies, and we have another 18 or so available. So if you're interested in doing that, make sure and go on Eventbrite and sign up for the FIC Bites and Buys.
Yeah, you had just sent your notes over to me, and so I saw that in there and I signed up. So
you already did?
I just did right when you sent it over.
It wouldn't be the same without you. And then the last thing I want to tell people is we are getting ready for the Winter Fancy Food Show that will be in Las Vegas, January 21st to 23rd. And we're doing something new this year. We actually are supporting two incubator village locations. One is part of the Regional Food Business Center, and we have 12 plus companies from our 6-state region, which is Montana, Idaho, Colorado, Oregon, Washington, Indiana, and Wyoming. And then we have about 12 to 14 companies with the Food Innovation Center. So it's going to be quite a wild ride at the Winter Fancy Food Show.
That sounds so fun. And are you still looking for people to come with you if people want to go? Should they contact you?
No, our roster's full for this winter show. But if you're interested and you've worked with the Food Innovation Center, just contact me at sarahmassoni.com. No, sorry. It's sarah.massoni at oregonstate.edu. And we'll talk and see what's up, see if we can fit you in.
Perfect. That sounds fun. While I wasn't there, there was a really fun hot sauce program that happened through the Department of Agriculture. I sent my sauce up there. I didn't go in person. But about 10 hot sauce makers from all around the states, but there was 5 or 6 from our Pacific Northwest hot sauce makers group that went up to Canada.
With Eric Garman.
Yeah, heard about that.
Yeah,
totally. And so that was
pictures
really
of people all around town and stuff.
Yeah, really fun event for people to do. And I just wanted to encourage people to go to those if they can, you know. Mm-hmm. Importing and exporting food from Oregon is very important. I think it's fun to get into other countries and show off what we can do. So it was a really fun, even though I wasn't there, I was here, but it was
you so still had fun
because all my sauce buddies were sending me pictures of my sauce there, and they did a whole food cart with all of our sauces, and the booth was really cool. It was like all backlit with black lights, and just a very fun event. So I think those things are really fun and important for all of us to do and get together and do it. So you guys can check that out. And if you are interested in exporting, you can always contact the Department of Agriculture. They have all these really great programs to get us out there into the world.
I'm going to interrupt. I actually made 3 batches of hot sauce at our house.
You did? With all your garden peppers?
I made the Missoni hot sauce, which is a red hot sauce. Then I made the Missoni super hot sauce, which is kind of orange and mostly habanero and other very hot orange peppers. No one's tasted it yet.
I'll come taste it for you.
I think I'll have some I can give you. And then the other one was a green hot sauce that was mostly like jalapenos and other serranos and stuff like that.
Fun.
So we have some hot sauce, and it's not processed. So it's just in the refrigerator.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. I knew you'd be proud of me.
I am proud of you, and I want to come try it. So
okay, sounds good.
Invite me over.
I will.
Well, we want to thank our sponsor, Market of Choice, for sponsoring our podcast. Let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Market of Choice is a proud sponsor of the Meaningful Marketplace because we believe in the power of local food entrepreneurs, so much so that we carry more than 7,000 locally made, raised, farmed, and harvested foods in our stores. Our passion is to help local makers, farmers, ranchers, and fisher folk realize their potential through programs that help them succeed. Thank you, Market of Choice. We love you.
Thanks, Market of Choice. Well, it's not just Sarah and I here today. We have a guest in the studio. We are joined with James Berry of Eat Pluck. Welcome, James.
Welcome to you. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, we're glad you could join us today. We want to make sure to connect our listeners to you and your company. So can you tell us your social media handles and your website information?
Yeah, well, so the product is called Pluck, and then Eat Pluck is actually our handle. So it's eatpluck.com, and then on Instagram it's Eat Pluck. Twitter, or X, formerly known as Twitter, is Eat_Pluck because it was already taken. And then I'm personally at Chef James Berry on Instagram and Facebook.
Okay, perfect. We'll look you up.
We will do our best to connect everybody to you. So why don't we start off with you describing your product to our listeners?
Sure. It's basically what we like to call an ancestral superfood powder. So we take freeze-dried powdered organ meats, the kind you'd find in capsules. That's normally how people are taking them these days. They're either, you know, buying and cooking organs, which is very few people. And then the other group of people, which is probably a little bit bigger, are taking capsules. And we really wanted to reclaim organ meats. We wanted to make it easy and delicious for people to start getting them back into their diets. And so we combined those freeze-dried powdered organ meats with seasonings and Redmond Real Salt. And we created basically what's a seasoning that you can put on anything, and it increases the flavor, makes everything taste delicious due to the umami in the organ meats. And then it increases the nutrition value because organ meats are really Mother Nature's multivitamin. They're the most nutrient dense bioavailable food out there.
I just heard you say something that I'm interested in. You said ancestral superfood. I want to know, who are your ancestors?
I know, right? You know, it's interesting. So my mom tells me, so she grew up in Brooklyn. She tells me that she ate lots of, liver and onions growing up. I know that when they used to go to the grocery store, or when they wanted, let's say, chicken, they would actually go to a poultry market and they would pick a live chicken and then come back an hour later and get a nice warm carcass. So there was a very big connection, even just a couple of generations ago, a connection to our food. the sourcing of the food and to where, you know, in general, where it came from. And nowadays, you know, sometimes I'll talk to kids, they don't even realize that pork is from a pig. It's really interesting. So there's a real disconnect happening. But even more so, I mean, if you look at our ancestors, even just another generation back, so great grandparents for some of us, they were eating even more parts of the animal than my mom, for example, who was in, you know, she was born in the 40s. So even before that, you had people eating things like brain, you had people eating parts of the animal that rarely people get in nowadays. And so I like to kind of look towards, there's this author, well, he's an archaeologist, a professor, his name's Bill Schindler, but he has a book called Eat Like a Human. And he talks about how, and I'm going to kind of mess up the numbers, but it's something around here. It's like 3 million years ago, we were, so basically we started out as foragers and we would spend a lot of time going into the forest and looking for food, and get very little calories from that food. And then we became scavengers. So that's about 3 million years ago. And even when we were scavengers, we were getting some meat, but we were getting it after the predator ate the food. And then something around 2.5 million years ago is we actually had a rudimentary tool and we became a predator. And we got something that we did not get before then, which was organ meats, blood, and fat. And those three things are what archaeologists see historically that really erupted our humanity, you know, allowed our bodies to change, allowed our brains to get bigger because we were getting more nutrients and less effort. And we also got fire around that time. So lots of changes happened. And so I hear stuff like that and I go, well, okay, look at us in this modern limit. I just believe, basically what I believe is that there's a lot of ancestral wisdom that we can take from the past and we can use it to support modern wellness instead of looking for all these laboratory made foods.
And, you know, I think you bring up a couple of good points. You know, I get most of my food from the farmer's market because I work at it. So that's like my everyday place. And I do think that people that shop at the farmer's market are used to this kind of eating because, you know, when farmers are there, you know, I'm on each side of my booth. I have a sausage person right next to me on one side and I have a lamb person right next to me on the other side. And many market customers come up and want the organ meats from the lamb guy. And then the sausage guy makes a sausage with all these different, heart and liver and things like that. And so I hear people requesting that every Saturday at the market. But I think to some of our listeners, if they're shopping at you know, a grocery store, they might not have that on their mind or be thinking about it. But I think it's just, you know, it depends on who you are and who you're shopping from. But it is part of if you're ingesting animal meat, it is part of the animal. And so, you know, there are all different kinds of things that you can do with it. And this is one of them. However, I think I would be more likely to eat your product that I can sprinkle on my food than I would be to grill up a liver or a heart from my farm neighbor. I appreciate that he does that, but I don't really want to cook
it. The beef heart is really kind of nice to eat. You can stuff it and then roast it, and it's very tasty. The liver for me is much harder to eat because it has just a really interesting texture and flavor when you cook it. And that's why people cook it with onions and bacon to try and mask the flavor.
Yeah.
It's a lot to swallow.
There's a lot of hurdles. I mean, and that's really what we were trying to solve. The three that I identified were, you know, you just mentioned, Sarah M, you know, that the taste, you know, and then also the cooking. Like a lot of us don't want to, we either don't know how to cook it, we don't want to deal with it. And then the third would probably be sourcing. And that's really what we solved. You know, we source from 100% grass-fed cows. We get them from New Zealand. I actually tried to source from the US, but it was actually harder than you would have thought. The supply chain for whole animal nutrition is really not there yet. And we are working on trying to get it there. But a lot of ranches do not have access to the whole animal. It's just hasn't historically been there. But New Zealand, that is their major export. So they are very dialed in. You can get literally almost, I would say, almost every part of that animal. And it's really clean, green grass-fed cows. And it's, they get green grass year round because it's an island. It's different climate than we have. Very hard to find that in other parts of the world, really. So we source from New Zealand. We get our spices and herbs from sustainable farms, from a broker that solicits sustainable farming practices. And then we combine them. And we really have focused on how do we just help people get, like, I look at Pluck as like the gateway. Like, I don't look at it as like, oh, this is all you should do. Like, it's great. You can only do this. But I really see it as the gateway because most people are not doing it. So we have something like 94% of Americans are nutrient deficient, but we're clearly not calorie deficient. So that's a really important distinction. It's not about that we're not eating enough food. It's about we're eating the wrong foods.
So if somebody's nutrient deficient, how would they feel? Do you have any like top line?
Yeah, that's, oh, I love that you asked that. No one ever asked that question. That is such a great question. So, you know, what's funny is it's the things that you don't realize are connected to nutrients. So a lot of times people don't realize that how they are feeling may be connected to what they're eating. So things like you're really groggy when you go to wake up in the mornings, you know, you need that coffee in the morning to kind of get you kickstarted. Things like not having energy consistently throughout the day, even heart issues, like so racing heart, and easily getting anxious can be tied to a lack of B vitamins. And you pointed out, Sarah, about eating heart and heart. So there's this concept of like supports like. It's a Native American concept, an ancestral concept, where the idea is that the organ you eat, the part of the animal you eat, is supporting that part in you. And on a certain level, it makes sense, right? Like, because that organ is designed to be to work specifically for itself, right? So the heart, for example, has CoQ10. It has these vitamins and minerals that are designed to help it do what it needs to do, which is pump the blood and whatnot and keep you alive. And so those nutrients, the abundance of nutrients in the heart, are going to support your heart in doing the same. And I just had this really fascinating conversation with someone just at the Weston A. Price Conference. It's called Wise Traditions Conference. And they were telling me that someone who had been living with some issues around their lungs, they were having some, breathing issues for months and months. We're trying all these over-the-counter drugs, went to their doctor, nothing was working. And then someone suggested, well, why don't you eat lung and see if that supports it? And they did. And 2 days later, it was gone. So what? That was a really fascinating testimony of like that like supports like.
Okay. That, my nurse practitioner, while I was pregnant, had a similar theory, which was that while you are pregnant and your body's creating lungs and heart and all the stuff and you're growing it, that you should eat those things as well. And I did. And
did she recommend the placenta as well? I mean, that's kind of...
She did. She recommended whatever I could, you know, whatever I was growing, I should be eating and I should be, you know, doing all this. And I did, but I also, you know, you saw I'm surrounded by like horror movies and stuff. So I also just couldn't not be thinking about Rosemary's Baby. I was eating these like grilled things. And I really feel like if
you didn't eat them raw, did you?
I didn't eat them raw. I cooked them. Goodness. But I couldn't get it out of my mind. So as I was eating it, I was kind of like, well, and I feel like your product is much more accessible. So I don't know if you have contacted doulas and nurse practitioners and people along those lines, but I think they would probably recommend your product to, you know, pregnant women just makes it easier.
Excuse my ignorance. Where do I get beef lungs and how do I cook them?
Yeah, it's not easy. I mean, like, you know, so we're actually going to be adding lung to our mix. So you'll be able to get it from us soon. It will be in our seasoning mix. But in terms of finding lung where you can cook it yourself, your guess is as good as mine. I mean, it's really doing an internet search or going to your local farmer's market and saying, do you get access to your lung? A lot of them will not. So it's just a crapshoot. I always think a good place to start is US Wellness Meats. They usually have access to a lot of parts. what is it? White Oak Pastures as well as I think a really good resource. But I, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't even think White Oak has access to lung. Yeah, it's really hard to find those specific ones. Like for example, tripe. Let's talk about tripe. So that's the stomach lining, right? That's a Mexican delicacy. Mm-hmm. It's in menudo. And if you go to a Mexican market, which is actually, so Asian markets and Mexican markets are really great places to find organs because other cultures eat organs. Hello. It's just mm-hmm. us. So go to those markets. But here's what's interesting is if you go to a Mexican market and you look for tripe, it will be bright white. Like I'm talking like Clorox kind of, you know, bleached white. And that's because it was bleached. Because mm-hmm. if anyone who's ever gotten the stomach lining from a cow, it's really hard to clean. Like you get it, it's greenish based on what they've been eating. You'll find nails in it if they ate nails. I mean, you literally find everything they've been eating. And you have to
cows can eat it. Anything. That's why they have four stomachs.
Exactly. So it's kind of like, I don't want to make it negative and say it's nasty, but it is nasty. You know what I mean? It's like, it's really hard to clean. And that's why they bleach it. Cause they're trying to kind of do it faster, but it's important to know that there's different ways to acquire these organs. There's different ways to do it. So if you're homesteading it, you're going to be working hard on some of these organs. They are not easy to do, but once you do it, it gets easier. You know, it's always the first time that's the hardest. And I always look at it like this. So if we were that tribe back in the day, you know, talking about the Paleolithic times, if we were a tribe of, let's just say 31 people, and we killed an animal, that, first of all, the killing of that animal was quite an activity. It could take us all week to kill that animal, more or more, right? So when we kill that animal, it's not like we're killing five and we're bringing them back. We're killing one for the entire tribe. And so how many livers are in that animal?
Just one.
You know, how many hearts are there? There's one. So this idea of people who are always saying like, oh, I just eat liver or I just eat this one organ. It's like, that's not the message I'm pushing. I am pushing whole animal. I really believe that a lot of our chronic diseases are coming from the fact that we are so kind of, I don't know, like tunnel focused on singular parts of animals, from muscle meat to not, like we're all in on certain things. Like we're either all in on being no animals, we're all in on just eating muscle meat. But my whole point is, like, I think we're omnivores. I think that we should be varied. And I think when you're eating animal, you should try to eat as much of the animal as possible. And yes,
I think
if you ate the stomach, it would take you a long time. Huh? I'm sorry, what?
People have to eat hot dogs now.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that funny though? Like, hot dogs were like this huge topic in the 90s because everyone learned that it had all these organs, you know, lips and ears and all this stuff in it. And people freaked out. Now they're all about saying it's all beef. It's like, well, that's still meat. That doesn't mean that they're not using the lips and all. It's just, they're
no
making sure it's all
cow.
It's
one of my favorite foods. I was always wondering what it was. It's probably because of that.
If hot dogs just had less salt, they would truly would be a health food. I mean, honestly, if they were just like a lot of those really clean hot dogs that are coming out nowadays, if they just had less sodium, and they're just so high in sodium, but other than that, they really are healthy for you.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about how to use your product.
Oregon State University's College of Agricultural Sciences and the Food Innovation Center are proud sponsors of Meaningful Marketplace. With a mission to serve all Oregonians, we are committed to giving voice to those whose food and agricultural stories are not always heard. By providing access and opportunity for a more diverse and just food system, because food brings people together.
Okay, we're back. I'm really interested to know, James, on your website, I noticed there's a lot of recipes and it seemed like they might have been put there by you, but by people who actually use your product. Is that true?
Yeah. So I'm a chef of 20 years and I used to cook for a private chef. I used to live in LA and cooked for many celebrities, but I have found, you know, we have people that use the product that send in recipes, but I've also curated some chefs that I found that I just thought they did a great job. And I asked them, can I will you make recipes for us? So there's a handful of everything, you know, from people that are just, we did contests and they won the contest, so they got their recipe on our site. But it's really amazing. Not only just, and you guys can both, you both can appreciate this since you're also creators, but isn't it amazing? Like, you know, you think of something in your house or in your living domain, and then suddenly you put it out there, and then now thousands and thousands of people are now receiving something that you just thought up one day.
Yeah.
And now they're using it, and you're getting this feedback. And one of the things that I hear from people is that they, you know how we all have those recipes that we rotate every other week, you know, it's just part of our food
or
rotation.
Or every week if you're
Or every week like for some of us. Well, the comment I get the most is that people will tell me, all I did differently this week was I used your seasoning in this recipe I make all the time. And that night, my family went crazy. They said, what did you do? This is amazing. I want seconds. And they got such vindication for the time they had spent making the food. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. Like, that's amazing that I can not only help people feel better in their body, but I can help them feel more appreciated for what they're doing in the kitchen.
Tell us about the chia pudding, though. That sounds a little weird to me. Is it a savory pudding?
No, it's sweet. So the beautiful thing is, so we have four SKUs. So three of them are savory. And those ones are original or all-purpose, zesty garlic, which is a which has no nightshades and no seeds for anyone that's AIP. And then we have spicy, mild. And then the fourth product is called pure. And so that is just the organ meats. It has no salt, no spices, no herbs. So for that one, it's incredibly versatile because it's kind of neutral tasting. So you can put it in sweet stuff or savory things. You just want whatever you're adding it to have flavor already, because otherwise it's going to be kind of, you know, a neutral. It's not going to bring much flavor. Now I say that, and there are carnivore eaters out there who are using pluck pure as their seasoning. So there's even, cause you know, when you're strict carnivore, you don't actually do anything but salt. So you do meat, salt, organs. And a lot of them are not doing the organs, so they're spreading pluck pure on it. And they tell me they love the way it tastes because it adds, you know, it adds a complexity to the food. But personally, I would add it to things that already have flavor. Smoothies, pudding, anything like that.
Tell us about carnivore diet. What is that? Is that emerging?
Yes. Oh my gosh.
It's not paleo. Carnivore.
It's not paleo. So, and there's even more subsets of carnivore. So there's even things called the lion diet, and even really go into lion diet, but there's something called lion, but carnivore diet is where you're only eating animal products. So you're not eating vegetables. You're not eating anything but something that comes from an animal. And depending on how, you know, intense someone is with it, some of them don't even do dairy. It just depends on, you know, how intensely they go into it. But most will eat dairy as well. But it's all animal based. Now, the issue, I did it for 30 days, so I can speak to it. I mean, it was pretty amazing. Like, so the idea behind it, and I'm not the creator of it, so I don't, I think Paul Saladino is one of the people that kind of pushed it initially. There's some other people as well. So I don't know who actually formally is the person who started it, but there's a handful of people that have been in it for a long time. And, what my understanding of it is that basically you're removing things that are toxic. So a lot of carnivore eaters will say that vegetables are toxic in the form that they are when they're growing and when you pick them, that they have defenses in them that really make it either hard for you to, you know, capture their nutrients, or sometimes they will leach nutrients out of you. So they find once they remove these products, these vegetables and grains and starches from their diet, that, and they just eat animal product, that their chronic illnesses go away, like from inflammation. I mean, and I've met some of these people. I've met some people that have literally reversed chronic disease using this diet. That said, it's also can be challenging because a lot of the people that do it only eat the muscle meat. They're not eating the organs. And the whole idea is that you should be eating an abundance of the animal, the whole animal. And so sometimes you can get constipated initially when your body is transitioning. When I did it for 30 days, I have to admit, I did love the simplicity of it. Like there's no kind of, you know how we all kind of go that through that like decision fatigue of like, what am I eating today? And sometimes you just kind of get, I don't know, lost in the process of what you're supposed to be eating. With carnivore, it's just like, oh, I'm eating some meat. there's no like.
Well, you're not eating like deli ham or prosciutto or stuff like that. You're just
not processed.
Boiled chicken breasts or.
Well, a lot of them mostly stick to cow. A lot of them stick to cow. Because it's so much more nutrient dense than poultry. Oh. But it varies. There's some that do just any animal, so it could be poultry, but it really varies. I recommend if this is resonating with anyone to look it up, but I don't want to advocate. You know, I really am a believer that we all have to follow our paths with our instincts of what we should eat. If anything, that's really what I try to advocate is like, let's get back to our individual instincts and what we should be eating. And one of the reasons why I'm really pushing that we eat our nutrition versus swallowing it, because obviously if there were already people, you know, supplying encapsulated organs, so it's like, well, why did I have to create a new product? It's because I really bothers me that we are moving moved.
Soylent Green capsule.
Yeah, well, this idea that you're so when you swallow your nutrients, you're bypassing your biological digestive process.
No saliva is getting into it.
No saliva, no immediate community. I always use the example of salt. Like if you took salt, put it on your tongue, your body would communicate exactly immediately what it needs. It would say, give me more or stop. And it does. Like anyone can try it. Try doing like 3 dips into the salt jar and your body will literally start to gag. It just gets so bad. Mm. But if you take a salt tablet and you swallow it 15, 20 minutes later, why am I bloated? Oh, I got too much of something. So one is working with your body and where your body is telling you exactly what it needs, your bioindividuality. And the other is just guesswork. You're just like guessing, oh, I think I need this. And I hear this all the time with encapsulated organs, that people will take the 6 that the bottle recommends and they feel nauseous. And I'm like, yeah, probably because you don't need 6.
Okay. So one of the reasons that you decided to focus on this was because a family member had a health issue. Can you tell us a little bit about what took you down this path?
Yeah. So I've been working as a chef, as I mentioned, nutrition and helping people with their nutrition and their health is very important to me, but I'm also a father. And I really kind of hit this head one day when my 2 girls, we had traveled to Canada, and on our trip, they got Shiga toxin, which is a form of E. coli. And it's very toxic or it's very deadly, I should say, for young kids and the elderly, because you can't hold anything down, like literally nothing. And if you're already kind of on the verge of, you know, not being, having the grit of being able to get through illness. If you're already feeling weakened, this can just weaken you considerably. Mm-hmm. And my oldest daughter, she was about 4 or maybe 5 then, and she got through it in 3 days. So she threw up, diarrhea, all that, past 3 days, she was fine. You can't take antibiotics when you're on this, by the way. You can actually hurt yourself if you take antibiotics. So that's what I mean. It's not something, you kind of just have to let it pass. And unless it gets really bad, then you have to go to the hospital and they just try to keep you hydrated until it passes. Wow. But basically my youngest, who was already very small, it just didn't stop. And I had to go away for business for 2 days. And I think she was on day 6 at this time, and of not being able to eat anything or drink anything. And I left thinking she was on the mend, and I came back and she was still in it, and she was literally skin and bones. So it's like the worst, you know, the last thing you want to see as a parent is see your child withering away and looking like she's dying basically. And, and it scared me. And I just remember this, not when I created Pluck, but I just remember thinking to myself, because basically a couple of days after I got back, she started to come out of it. And the only thing she could keep down was toast. And butter, basically. And, you know, as a parent, you're just like, oh, toast and butter. Like, that's like not that healthy. And you're just thinking like
rudimentary food.
Yeah, right. It's just like, it's just not the best health, the food. So I kept thinking to myself, man, I wish there was something I could sprinkle on this toast that would boost the nutrition of it, but not affect her her eating it, you know, mm-hmm. that it would have very low impact and not kind of not affect her sensibilities where she's like tries to turn it away. Because obviously if you put pate, for example, on the toast, she's going to turn it away, right? It has a certain smell and texture to it. So I wanted something that was really just kind of easy and was going to add good flavor. And that's kind of where I came up with the concept, but I didn't really know that it was going to be what it is until much later. But that's definitely, it was out of that desperation of wanting to support my children's nutrition.
Could I sneak it into my husband's cinnamon and sugar that he puts on his toast?
If you get Pluck Pure, yes, okay. Absolutely. He won't know. And the key is you got to, it's just ratios. So you got to make sure that the cinnamon is the bigger ratio. So I would do like 85% cinnamon and then 15% of the Pluck Pure, or even start with 10. But what's amazing about it, so Pluck has five organs. So it has liver, heart, kidney, spleen, and pancreas. We're eventually going to be adding lung and even bone marrow. And those five organs, they're freeze-dried. So when you take a wet organ and you freeze-dry it, you're left with about 21 to 23%. So you lose a lot just from the water weight when you freeze-dry an organ. So I like to tell people, I'm like, this is very concentrated. Like, yes, you're getting pinches at a time, but it's extremely concentrated. And I'm more interested in the things that we do daily. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you do something. If you go running once a month, yay for you. But it's not going to move the needle. What's going to move the needle is the things we do every day, like brushing our teeth. We do these things. They're not things we have to think about. And that's what interests me around health. I want us all to get to a place with health where you don't have to think about it and it's not a chore. And that's what I love about Pluck, because you're getting, first of all, it's not a new habit. We already season our food. So I'm just saying season it with this instead of Lowry's or whatever else you're using. And then the other thing is it's microdosing. So you're getting microdosing frequently because you're using it in all your meals. And that's cumulative effect.
I see.
And so then once you have something like that where you don't have to think about it, then it doesn't matter what happens in your life. You could have a death in the family. You could get ill. It won't matter because the things that we do daily don't get affected by our emotions. Like you don't not brush your teeth because you broke up with someone that day. You know what I'm saying? These are habits that we do daily. And that's what I want. I want things that aren't going to get emotionally caught up in your daily life, but they're just things that you do. You go on autopilot. I call it like the Netflix of health, you know, like you just buy it. You don't think about it anymore. And it doesn't matter if you get that $9.99 bill every month, you're still getting out of it what you want. So it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And that's what I want for everyone. I just want everyone to always be healthy and not have it be such a headache as I feel like it is.
Timing's really good. I just literally cleaned out my spice drawer at home. I had like 50 jars of stuff in there. And so I started like, okay, Sarah, you have five different peppers. You think you have enough pepper in the drawer? Three different mustard powders. Well, now I need to get some of this and I'll add it into my pantry.
Well, thank you. And I look forward to hearing how you like it. I mean, I personally use it. I mean, I really did create it for myself. You know, I didn't grow up eating organs. I don't like the taste of, I more like the taste now that I've been doing this, and I do work with organs much more than I have, you know, my first 40 years, but the last 5 years I've been definitely, using them more often. And to your point, you know, if anyone wants to kind of ease into organs, obviously Pluck is a really great gateway, but don't stop there. Like if you're going to do organs, a great first organ to do is chicken hearts. Chicken and turkey. Yeah, they're so mild and they take on other flavors really well. And what I love about chicken over turkey is it's smaller so that you can chop it up. Just like treat it like a mushroom. You know how like if you're making a spaghetti sauce, you'd add on like maybe three or four mushrooms. It's not all mushrooms. Like just treat the heart like that too.
Actually, my family used to make spaghetti sauce with turkey heart and gizzards.
There you go. And you probably didn't even taste it.
Forgotten about that. Yeah.
You don't taste it. The key is like what I said earlier is it's all about ratios. So you just chop them up. So to Sarah Marshall's point, like it doesn't look like a heart, because if it looks like a heart, you think about all the horror movies. So it doesn't look like a heart because you have chopped it up. And then you only do a handful of them and you ease into starting getting these organ meats in it. And here's the thing that's amazing. is once you start getting these nutrition into your body, you start to feel different. Like the things that we talked about earlier, you start to have more energy, you start to sleep better, you start to feel better. And when we feel better in our body, we treat others better. And I truly, truly believe that if I can help people feel better in their body, we will have a better world.
That's super cool. I think we forgot to ask you where people can buy your product. Can you tell us?
No, that would be a good question, right? well, we are in some health food stores, and you can go to our website and we have a part that says locations and you can find places, but really it's from our website at eatpluck.com or Amazon. We are on Amazon as well. And we are in 2024, we're going to be really making more efforts to get into retail. So hopefully you'll find us at a, you know, grocery store near you in the near future, but we haven't actually tried to do that we've been around 3 years and we haven't focused on retail because we really just wanted to be a strong e-commerce company at first. But
and we had
Amazon's been doing
show.
Really well. So
we had you or someone from your company on the show in April of 2021. It was episode 78.
And yeah, that was Amanda.
Like to see what's different, what's happened in the last couple of years for your company. I guess you were just starting in 2021?
Yeah, we were just starting. We had one product then, that was the all purpose, which we now call original. COVID was, I think, was it still going on? I guess it was in 2021.
It's kind of getting bad right now again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that was very fascinating. I don't know if you've talked to many people that launched their food product during COVID.
We did.
Mm-hmm. And that was fascinating. I had this product that no one had tasted because it's the first of its kind. No one had ever combined these ingredients before. So we had a product that no one had ever tried before. They'd never heard of it before. They didn't know how it tasted. And so now we're like launching. It's like, how do we explain to people what it tastes like? How do you explain what umami is? Right. Mm-hmm. So what I would do is I would get on podcasts and I would send the podcast hosts the product before I was on the podcast.
Nice.
And I would let them taste it. And then I would ask them, I trusted that they were going to like it because I thought it was really good. So I would ask them on the podcast, how did you like it? What did you use it on? What did you think of it? And I would let them talk to their audience about their experience. And that really helped. It really did kind of help launch us and get us out there. I did lots of podcasts, and then now that things are much more open, we go to conferences and we are vendors a lot of times. We're the word is getting out there more and more, and we really hope for like accelerated growth in 2024, because we now have, I feel like we really have the proof of concept. Like people really love it. We know that it works. We know that we have our supply chains down. Like we have all the nuts and bolts of the business kind of like grounded and ready to go. And now we just need even more growth so that we can even do more things.
That's cool. So one thing we do like to ask folks is, do you have any advice that you'd like to offer to a startup food company?
Yeah, I would say, and this is obviously coming from someone who, like I said, launched during COVID, be nimble, you know, be willing to pivot. And I'll share this example. So when we launched in 2020, we were using pink Himalayan salt. And, you know, I've been a chef for a long time, and pink Himalayan salt, in my judgment, was pretty clean. But then as we launched, I started hearing from more and more people, and there had been some recent salt studies that were showing that it wasn't necessarily clean. And so I kept getting a lot of customers saying, why don't you guys do Redmond real salt? Like, could you guys do that? And I honestly, that was a salt that I had thought of using before I launched, but the spice broker that I had originally launched with didn't use it. Like I couldn't get it from them. So I had to kind of work with what they had, and they had pink Himalayan, and we can't use sea salt because it's too wet. It doesn't work very well.
It is kind of wet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So basically though, after I got that feedback, I started looking for a new spice, broker, and we found someone that was willing to source Redmond real salt, and we pivoted. And it was amazing. I mean,
where is it from? Where's Redmond Real
Salt? Redmond's is from Redmond, Utah. So it's very similar nutrient profile to Pink Himalayan, but it's domestic. So I like that. I like that we don't have to, you know, ship it from so far away as Pink Himalayan is.
Oh my gosh. I think I found one of those in my spice drawer.
Which one? The Redmond Real Salt?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I have that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really clean one. They third-party test it for microplastics and for everything, and they're a really good company. But what was fascinating that I had not planned on. So first of all, once we pivoted to Redmond Real Salt, not only did it beef up our audience, so people that really were already fans of Redmond started to then become fans of us, but also it created branding collaboration because we could reach out to Aunt Redmond's and say, hey, we use your product. Can we do something together? And they were very open to it.
That's so great. Suddenly
we didn't feel so alone, you know, and that was
co-branding is so powerful, isn't it?
It's so powerful. There's one thing that I'm about to do that I think is going to be game changing. And it's basically creating a sample size.
Nice.
We're going to create a tiny, like, little pouch that is about a 5 gram serving. So that's a little under a teaspoon.
Maybe you can get it on the airplane. People can add it to their Bloody Mary.
Mm-hmm. That would be
just
amazing.
Just like those funny lemon and lime packets they have now.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I totally have seen on Alaska. I've seen those.
Mm-hmm. You could have real organs.
Yeah, but what we're going to do with these samples that I think will be revolutionary for us is we're going to partner with other companies. So basically, for example, like Kettle and Fire. So they're a bone broth company. So we're going to get them, you know, a certain amount of these samples for their audience so they can put them in their direct to consumer boxes. And then they're going to give us something that we can put in ours. And so it becomes this collaboration where we can reciprocate. We can reach their audience with our very complimentary product to their bone broth. It tastes so good in bone broth.
Do you really need a retailer when you can have relationships like that? Because you don't have to use distributors the way you're going. You can just self-distribute, which Sarah Marshall does with her product.
I'm a huge fan of that. I'm a huge fan of that. And I totally get why, because this, you know, grocery and distributors take a large chunk of your money.
Huge chunk of your money.
So I'm a big fan. I once talked to the Paleo Valley. They do a lot of those meat sticks, and they have a lot of products. But I talked to Chaz, the owner of that once, and they've grown that company into massive, you know, 100 million plus business. Mm-hmm. And I said, why aren't you guys in retail? And he said, because we want to make money.
Right.
Yeah.
Why do you want to give 40% of your income away to somebody who has a big truck and a warehouse?
Well, I think it's part of what some people have to do, depending on how big you want to grow your business. So I think, if you have a really specific audience, which you do, you have a specific audience of people that they want, you know, are, doesn't mean that they are completely where they want to be health-wise, but they're clearly focusing on their health. And I think that it's hard to go into a grocery store and find a product like yours on all of the shelves. I think that there's so much stuff, they would really have to already be searching for something like that. But I think, you know, partnering with another company is very smart, because I think that they will already be, you know, looking for this one product, but they're not walking into a grocery store looking for that one product, because they wouldn't find yours. They would be in a different section, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. And there is, I know that there are some companies that use retail, not for sales, but more for marketing.
Just to get on the shelf.
Yeah, exactly. Just to be on the shelf to make sure that your product is out there.
If I were you, I would want to make sure I was placed by the meat counter, or not on the aisle, somewhere maybe above the cheese in the deli section. I don't know, but I wouldn't want to be on the aisle.
I think that would be amazing if we can get that. We're right now, just to kind of pull back the curtain, as we start to look towards potentially going bigger in retail, we're talking to a company where I think they used to be actually in the Pacific Northwest, but maybe they're in LA now. I'm not sure, but they helped to get products out there. They helped Epic Provisions when they first launched. They worked with Primal Kitchen when they first launched, and they really helped make these brands. And so we're talking with them ourselves right now. And one thing that we're trying to talk to them about is exactly like, where will you find our product? And we're thinking of having, if we can do it, if we can convince the stores of actually having two places, because technically we can have a shaker.
Yeah.
But we really, you know, we're all about triple bottom line, you know, people, profit, planet, right? So I don't, I don't want to keep creating products that people are just throwing away. Like, I'd much rather have where we have a shaker that you refill, right? So that we're not constantly just.
Oh, you know, you should be at Penzi's Spice.
Penzi's Spice, that would be me. I've actually, I talked to them once and they, I don't know. I don't know if they were ready for it. I talked to them like 2 years ago, but I did go and talk to them because they're a great spice company. But the thought is that we would have a shaker potentially either on that butcher area or on the seasoning shelf. But then that shaker would direct you towards, hey, do you want to refill this? Go to your supplement area. Cause I actually think that the product should be next to collagen in the supplements as well.
Because I think that makes sense.
And we could have a refill bag in that area because honestly, if you see our product, so our product's going to be a bit more expensive than your normal spices because those don't have organ meats in it, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be a hard sell if you see a product, you know, if you see Spike or something for $4.99 and then you see us for, I don't know, $12.99. It's a huge jump. Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you don't understand the value of organ meats, you're not going to get it.
Well, you're probably starting a whole new category. Maybe you should be by the seaweed at Whole Foods instead.
Oh, that would be good too, because they have those seaweed seasonings and stuff.
Yeah, they started out with only two SKUs. Now they have like a whole section at Whole Foods for seaweed and ocean vegetables. So,
yeah, no, I agree. I think something, but to your point, I think thinking a little outside the box, because I think that the reason why I keep thinking supplement aisle for our refill bags is because if you put our product next to a big bag of collagen, which is really kind of where it, I think people are thinking of it, that bag's going to be, you know, I don't know, a lot of those bags are $60-$70. And then ours,
maybe you need to be at Costco.
Oh, well, that'd be amazing. I mean, but you know, our bags would be so much cheaper than that, you know? And, yeah. And so I'm just kind of trying to figure out where is it, where the price point will be valued, because if it's next to something too cheap, then you don't understand the value.
Yeah. I think we're done for the day. Are we not, Sarah Marshall?
Yeah. Unfortunately, you guys, I have to wrap us up. So James, it was so good to hear from you again and hear about your new products and all the things that you're doing. You've expanded your business and it sounds like you have many more ideas and things to do. So we'll follow along on your journey. And I'm so glad that you could join us today.
Great.
Thank you for having me. And I just want to just give a shout out to Portlandians. I just moved from Portland in August. And I have to say, so I'm on the East Coast now and I miss Portland food so much.
Portland food is truly
the best in the entire world, particularly the US. And it's just, you can't find the food you can find in Portland elsewhere.
So such a diverse menu in our city. Oh,
incredible. So I just want to give a shout out to all the Portland food makers. We miss you. We love you. And you're doing such great work. So thank you.
Well, thanks, James. We record Missoni and Marshall every week. You can find us on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you to our audio engineer, Lon, and our production assistant, Chelsea. If you want to be a guest on the show, we are booking for 2024. You can send us a message on our Instagram or find us on our website. We will be back next week. Thanks for joining, everybody. Bye.
Bye for now.
You're listening to the Startup Radio Network. Listen, learn. Launch. 10% of our gross revenue goes directly to women entrepreneurs in developing countries around the world through Kiva's microfinance program.